Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Trademark Tack Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 21st, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its decision in Hanna Financial v. Hanna Bank. This trademark case involves a rule called tacking, which permits the owner of a trademark to modify the trademark without losing the priority established by being the first user of the trademark. Tacking, however, is only permitted as long as the modified trademark establishes the same continuing commercial impression so that consumers consider both as the same mark. The question in this case was whether the judge or the jury should determine whether a consumer would consider the original trademark and the modified trademark to be the same. In an opinion delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court unanimously held that the jury, rather than a court, should determine whether the use of an older trademark may be tacked to a newer one. The judgment of the Ninth Circuit was affirmed. To discuss the case, we have Michael Risch, who is a professor of law at the Villanova University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Risch.
One of the touchstone rules of trademark law is that you must use the mark in commerce. You must use it in the connection with the sale or advertising of goods or services. Furthermore, battles about who has the right to use the mark may depend on who used the mark in commerce first. The question of first use, though, is complicated when someone buys or modifies the trademark. You have to start with a new use date unless you tack onto the prior use of the mark. Tacking is available when the original and the revised marks are what we call legal equivalents, in that they create the same or continuing commercial impression. So a common example of this is when Apple switched from its rainbow-colored apple to the solid apple in the late 1990s. It claimed tacking back to the 1970s when it first introduced the rainbow apple in commerce. If someone had started using a confusingly similar solid apple in, let's say, 1991, they would not be able to claim priority over Apple, despite Apple's later use of the solid apple. Now, if you buy a whole company, this is easy if the company is a going concern. The new company just keeps using the new trademark, and the tacking is rarely questioned because the product doesn't change. But what if you just buy the mark from somebody and apply it to a new product, or you're the same company but you modify the mark? This is when tacking gets more complicated. In those cases, it must be determined whether there was a legal equivalent. So let's reconsider the Apple example. On its face, it seems unfair to hold somebody liable when they had started using the solid apple in 1991 and Apple hadn't started using it until the late 1990s. But if we think that the solid apple is really the equivalent of the rainbow apple, then the later user had no business using it in 1991 in the first place. Apple had a continuing right since the 1970s. So now we move on to this case. From a trademark perspective, this is a pretty easy case, or at least straightforward. Hanna Financial and Hanna Bank are both financial service providers using a nearly identical name. Putting aside complications such as where the banks are located, consumers are likely to be confused when someone says, "I need to go make a deposit at Hanna." Thus, whoever started using the mark first is likely to win the case. Now, that's all interesting stuff, the bread and butter of trademark law, but it's not what the Supreme Court case is really about. Instead, the Supreme Court case is about who decides whether or not a new mark or a new use is the legal equivalent of the old mark. So to answer that question, let's see what happened in the case. The plaintiff below, who was also the petitioner in the Supreme Court, was Hanna Financial, who was formed in 1994 and started using the Hanna Financial mark in commerce in 1995. The defendant was formed in Korea in 1971 as Korea Investment Finance Corporation. In 1991, that entity changed its name to Hana Bank and started using that name in Korea. In 1994, it began a service called the Hana Overseas Korean Club, which advertised to Korean expatriates in the United States. The ad said Hana Overseas Korean Club in English and Korean, as well as Hana Bank, but Hana Bank was only in Korean. In 2000, the defendant's service was renamed to Hana World Center. In 2002, the defendant opened a bank in the United States called Hana Bank, and this was its first physical presence in the United States. Hana Financial sued Hana Bank for trademark infringement in 2007. After a procedural ruling and appeal, the issue of tacking and priority was tried to a jury, and the jury ruled in favor of the defendant. It ruled that, in fact, Hana Bank was prior in time to Hana Financial because the changes in the marks or services were legally equivalent, quote, such that consumers consider both as the same mark, end quote. And thus, Hana Bank had priority and was allowed to use the Hana Bank mark, even though it technically didn't use the exact words Hana Bank until later. Hana Financial now claims it was error to allow the jury to make this determination. The Ninth Circuit affirmed the jury's verdict, saying that tacking applies in only exceptionally narrow circumstances, but also that it is a fact-intensive question. The Ninth Circuit also noted a circuit split that the Supreme Court must now resolve. And so Justice Sotomayor delivered the opinion of a unanimous court, resolving the circuit split. And the court uses a simple logic to decide the question. First, the test is the understanding of the ordinary consumer. What would the ordinary consumer think of the old trademark and the new trademark, and are they legally equivalent? Second, the court has a long history of deferring to juries on fact-based questions of the ordinary person. Thus, this is a matter for a jury. A simple syllogism. The primary analysis is about 1.5 pages long, including string cites and discussion about how judges can decide facts in bench trials and how summary judgment rules still apply. The court deflects four attacks on this logic. First, although tacking is a legal threshold, we often send mixed questions to juries. Therefore, this mixed legal factual question should be sent to a jury. Second, the plaintiff argued that tacking relies on comparisons to precedent. Is this mark more like a case where tacking was allowed, or is it more like a case where tacking wasn't allowed? The court was unconvinced that this was important policy, or even how the question was answered by prior decisions. Third, the court notes that the unpredictability of juries with respect to tacking would be no worse than any other court, contract, tort, or criminal dispute that we have juries here now. Fourth, reliance on history is misplaced, because most of the cases where judges determined tacking issues were bench trials and summary judgment motions, not court determinations in jury trials. Adding these four deflections on top of the logic, it's clear that juries should be determining tacking. So what does all this mean? I'll address this question from the narrow to the broad. For trademark tacking law, it is unclear how much will change. The cases are all over the map, with many seemingly tackable cases left untacked, and other seemingly different marks considered legally equivalent. In other words, the uncertainty Hana Financial was concerned about was already in play long before this case. Thus, the real effect of this ruling may not be known for some time. Will courts use summary judgment to enforce the supposedly exceedingly narrow tacking rules? Or will the results of this high-profile case mean that they leave more questions up to the jury, and the jury might be more willing to find tacking? Or will we even know if the jury finds tacking because jury precedent is much harder to find than non-jury precedent? More broadly, this opinion might have an effect wherever we see ordinary participants in IP law. This actually applies to any law, really, but I will limit these comments to IP. For example, there are some circuits where determining whether the ordinary consumer is likely to be confused, the poll star for trademark infringement. In those circuits, it is treated as something less than a pure jury question. Hanna Financial might imply that the jury must make all determinations, and those circuits may have to revisit how they treat likelihood of confusion in the run-of-the-mill trademark infringement case. But this case might even extend and have an impact in patent law. For example, patent obviousness is determined by considering what the person having ordinary skill in the art would think. Courts have long treated this as a question for the bench, and the court has been reluctant to take a case testing whether a judge or jury must make the final determination. But Hanna Financial implies that this issue could be revisited to determine whether juries must make determinations. On the other hand, a person having ordinary skill in the art may not necessarily be the reasonable person or the ordinary consumer, and thus obviousness might be treated differently. Most broadly, this case is both silent on, yet makes a profound statement about the history and role of our jury system. By silence, I mean that there's no appeal to the Constitution, the common law at the time of the founding, or otherwise, or even any deep philosophical principle that justifies jury determinations. And that is the profound statement here. You only need a page of analysis from a unanimous Supreme Court. Jury determinations are how we determine what the reasonable person would do, whether in tort, contract, or crime. That's the way it's done. That's the way it's always been done. Intellectual property is no island in this stream, and we simply should not have exceptionalism when we're considering factual questions. So that's it for Hanna Bank. It could be an exceedingly narrow case. It could be an exceedingly broad case. It depends on how you look at it, and more importantly, it depends on how courts look at it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.